sports history fans. I'm Ross from the podcast Pigskin Tales. You're about to jump into another thrilling sports history moment, but first, let's dive into today's sponsor, just in time for the holiday season. Introducing Art of Words, the brainchild of word artist Dan Duffy from Philadelphia. Dan meticulously crafts stunning images by handwriting relevant words from some of the greatest sports moments in time. These unique, budget-friendly illustrations are the perfect gift, sparking cherished memories and capturing hearts. Choose from city skylines, sports, history, and musicians to find a piece for everyone. And here's the exciting part. For that sports fanatic in your life, gift them a piece of their favorite team or player's history. Art of Words tells a compelling story. Explore collegiate stadiums, each meticulously crafted with every football victory etched into words. Or venture into baseball stadiums, handwritten with every player from the team's illustrious history. My favorite on the site is Bryce Harper 2021 MVP year. Because I'm a big stats guy, I think that's one of the coolest things ever. Check it out. Don't wait. Order a print today for yourself and your loved one this holiday season. Transform your wall into a gallery of captivating art and surprise your family and friends with a print of their own. Use code SHN15 at artofwords.com for a 15% discount on your order in November and December. Visit Art of Words, where words magically transform into stunning art, evoking cherished memories and touching the hearts of those who you care about. Again, use the code SHN15 for 15% off at artofwords.com.
There's many times in football history where the best teams have the best players, and sometimes it's the great executives who have that will to win and the notion and the gumption and talent to find talent. Those are the teams that win. We're going to see some evidence of both the players and the contributors of coaching and general managers help build winners in today's football history headlines for January 23rd. We'll talk more about them in just a moment.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. This is your host, Aaron Hayes, and we're broadcasting from the Pig Pen in Western Pennsylvania to bring you the memories of the gridiron one day at a time. So with Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff supplying us with the tunes, let's go no huddle through today's football history headlines. Hello, my football friends, and welcome to the Pigpen. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com, and we hope that you've been enjoying these football history headlines, and we want to tell you of some things that are going to be coming up after the Super Bowl. Right around February 8th, we're going to start on a journey where we're going to go through the uniforms of the NFL players and some college, in particular, the uniform numbers, and we're going to start at 0 and 00, work our way all the way up to 99, and we're going to have some great guests along the ways. We'll take some pauses here and there because we have some special things planned, but we're going to start it off with Bill Schaefer of the Gridiron Uniform Database, and he's going to tell us about the history of the uniform and some things to look at in uniforms that maybe we hadn't noticed before. You'll learn a lot. We also have a great interview with one of the legends of the game from a legendary football first family, Upton Bell, whose father was Burt Bell, and his grandfather was with Walter Camp at the meetings before the NCAA was the NCAA, met with Teddy Roosevelt back in the day. Great stories from him as well. Well, those are all coming up in February. Make sure you stay tuned and make sure you hit that subscribe button. Right now, let's get to our football history headlines. And we'll start off January 23rd, 1950. The NFL rule changes with, according to the sportaddict.com, where unlimited free substitution was restored. This opened the way for the era of two platoon systems and specialization in pro football, such as an offensive team, defensive team, and special team specialists. January 23rd, 1952. The Dallas Texans franchise forms in 1952 as a franchise was awarded after Dallas purchased the assets of the New York Yanks from the NFL. January 23, 1953, at the owners' NFL meetings, the successful sale of the franchise that would become the reincarnation of the Baltimore franchise took over 4 weeks as Carol Rosenblum became the principal owner of the new Baltimore Colts and absorbed basically the defunct Dallas Texans teams that we just talked about. They only lasted a year. If we look back at the December 28th history headlines, you'll learn a little bit more about that. Also decided at this meeting was the NFL's National and American Conferences would become the Eastern and the Western Conferences. We know that eventually it would change back after the merger and go back to the American Football Conference and a National Football Conference. But there was that span where they were the Eastern and the Western. January 23rd, 1978, at Tampa Stadium. At the NFL Pro Bowl, the NFC squad edges out the AFC 14-13. What a game that was. The game's MVP was Chicago Bears running back Walter Payton. According to the Tampa Sport History Blogspot, the game was broadcast nationwide on ABC and called by the renowned Monday Night Football crew of Frank Gifford, Dandy Don Meredith, and Howard Cosell. Big time game that was for the Pro Bowl then. January 23, 1983, at Miami's Orange Bowl. The New York Jets in the early 1980s were a team built on speed. The worst thing that could have happened to a team of that nature is to have it rain for days on end in southern Florida's on a natural playing surface. And unfortunately for the Jets, it did occur according to a Newsday article. The game had gone down in the annals of NFL history as the Mud Bowl, as it was called. The wet, muddy field negated the Jets' significant speed and skill advantage, and the Miami Dolphins benefited as they blanked the New York Jets 14-0 in the AFC Championship game to advance to the Super Bowl. January 23, 1994, at Rich Stadium in Orchard Park, New York. The 1993 season's AFC Championship game saw the passing offenses almost nullified by the defenses. Bills running back Thurman Thomas thrived with 186 yards on the ground and 3 touchdowns as the Buffalo Bills beat the Kansas City Chiefs 30-13 to advance to Super Bowl 28. And who would their opponents be? Well, that was decided on that same day in 1994 at Texas Stadium in Irving, Texas. The Dallas Cowboys punched their tickets to Super Bowl 28 as to face the Buffalo Bills as they knocked off the San Francisco 49ers 38-21 in the NFC Championship game. January 23rd, 2000, Alltel Stadium in Jacksonville. Some new names were found in the AFC Championship game in the new millennium as the Tennessee Titans beat the Jacksonville Jaguars 33-14 per the ProFootballReference.com website. Titans quarterback Steve McNair had almost as many yards rushing, 91 with 3 TDs, as he did passing when he went 14 of 23 for 112 yards. With the victory, Tennessee earned the right to play in Super Bowl 34. And their opponents, with that game played that same day, was a defensive battle that ensued in the 1999 season's NFC Championship game played at the Trans World Dome in St. Louis, per the Pro Football Reference website. The St. Louis Rams outscored the Tampa Bay Buccaneers 11-6 to advance to Super Bowl 34 to face those Titans. January 23, 2005, at Heinz Field in Pittsburgh, the New England Patriots ruined the party for the Pittsburgh Steelers as they handily defeated them 41-27 in the AFC Championship game. Patriot wideout Deion Branch scored twice as New England won the Lamar Hunt Trophy. And their opponents in the Super Bowl that year, the Philadelphia Eagles, knocked out the Atlanta Falcons 27-10 in the NFC Championship played at Lincoln Financial Field in Philly. Chad Lewis caught 2 Donovan McNabb passes to help the Eagles advance to Super Bowl 39 per the ProFootballReference.com. January 23, 2011, the NFC Championship game played at Soldier Field in Chicago was a matchup of 2 longtime NFC North rivals, and in the game for the right to play in the Super Bowl, it was the Green Bay Packers knocking out the Chicago Bears 21-14. And their opponent was in a game played at Heinz Field on that same day as the AFC Championship game at Steelers running back Rashard Mendenhall run for 27 times for 121 yards and scored once to help the Pittsburgh Steelers overcome the New York Jets 24-19 per an ESPN.com story. Wow, with all those headlines and excitement, let's take just a breather for just a second. As we take a quick break from the headlines, let me remind you that you can also learn more about the gridiron history on our website, pigskindispatch.com. And you can contact me, Darren Hayes, at pigskindispatch@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. Speaking of hearing from someone, here is one of my podcasting partners from the sportshistorynetwork.com that has a message for you.
Hello, sports fans. My name is Mark Mortier, and my show is called Yesterday Sports. My show mainly focuses on old school sports from the 1960s, 70s, and 80s. I'm a member of the Pro Football Researchers Association and a sports historian. I have a podcast every other Tuesday, so come join us at the Sports History Network for a trip down memory lane.
Now, that is definitely a podcast you don't want to miss, and I'm going to check it out right after I get done with this podcast. Let's go to some Hall of Fame birthdays. January 23rd, 1935, at Throckmorton County, Texas, Oklahoma's fantastic fullback, linebacker, and center, Jerry Tubbs, was born. According to his bio on the NFF website, in Jerry's three seasons with the Sooners, they played 31 games, and over that span, they never lost a single one. Tubbs started at fullback in 1954, averaging over 6 yards per carry, but in 1955 his coach moved him to the center position, and remarkably, the bold move paid even greater dividends as the Sooners' rushing attack became even more fierce with Tubbs blocking up front. As a linebacker in 1955, he was everywhere. In fact, in the Texas game that year, he picked off 3 Longhorn passes. The National Football Foundation selected Jerry Tubbs to enter into their ranks of the College Football Hall of Fame in 1996. Tubbs had an 11-year pro career as a linebacker for the Chicago Cardinals, San Francisco 49ers, and the Dallas Cowboys. He then had a 21-year career as an assistant coach with those same Cowboys. January 23, 1936, Jordan, Montana. Jerry Kramer, the star guard of the University of Idaho, was born. Jerry was a fourth-round pick of the Green Bay Packers in the 1958 NFL Draft, according to the ProFootballHOF.com website. Kramer was looked upon as the foundation of the Lombardi-era's Packers O-lines, as his athletic skill and smarts made him a formidable challenge for any defender to get past. He was a starter in 6 NFL championships and also 2 Super Bowls, and the Packers only lost one time in those 8 games. Jerry was named to the All-NFL team 5 times in his 11-year pro career, and he played in 3 Pro Bowls. This man had special skills that even employed him as the Packers' kicker in the 1962 and 1963 seasons, and even a little bit in his last year in the league. In fact, his 3 field goals in the 1962 NFL Championship game propelled Green Bay to victory over the Giants. In 2018, Jerry Kramer slipped on the brand new gold jacket and was enshrined into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. January 23, 1952, East St. Louis, Illinois. Washington University of St. Louis linebacker Shelby Jordan arrived into this life. According to the footballfoundation.org website, Shelby was a 6'7", 270-pound beast as he led WUSL in tackles for 3 consecutive seasons en route to being named a Kodak first-team All-American during his senior campaign. The National Football Foundation voters selected Shelby Jordan to be inducted into the College Football Hall of Fame in the year 2013. After graduation, Jordan went into the 7th round of the 1973 NFL Draft as he was picked by the Houston Oilers. Eventually, Shelby became a 6-year starter with the New England Patriots at offensive tackle and later won Super Bowl 18 with the Los Angeles Raiders. January 23, 1971, Savannah, Georgia. The great offensive lineman of the LSU Tigers, Kevin Mowey, was born. Kevin played in the NFL for 16 seasons, according to his Hall of Fame bio on the ProFootballHOF.com website. He played in 8 Pro Bowls over that span and was on the All-2000s All-Decade team as a center. Kevin was originally drafted in the 2nd round of the 1994 NFL Draft by Seattle and played guard for the first 2 seasons in the league. He then changed to the position of center, where he thrived for the rest of his long career. Altogether, he played 4 seasons with the Seahawks, 8 with the New York Jets, and his final 4 years as a member of the Tennessee Titans. The Pro Football Hall of Fame enshrined Kevin Mowey in the class of 2019. We sure are appreciative that you joined us once again on these football history headlines and legends of Hall of Famers, and we hope that tomorrow on January 24th you'll join us again, as well as on in the future, because we have some really great shows and episodes planned for you. And remember, we podcast about football history every single day of the year, so make sure you join us. One way to do that is to hit the subscribe button on the podcast player you're listening to right now. You can also go to your favorite podcast provider and tell them you want to subscribe to the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch podcast. If you don't want to do that, email us at pigskindispatch@gmail.com. We'll put you on our mailing list. We'll shoot you an email every single morning at 6:47 a.m. Eastern Time. You'll get that podcast as well as the great articles that we're posting that day on our website, pigskindispatch.com. Another avenue is you can go to the sportshistorynetwork.com, where we are a partner, and you can see our podcast as well as all the other podcasts. And I think there's 13 of us all together on there, and it's growing every day, so that might be outdated just by me saying that. But you just can't believe the talent of these other podcast hosts on our Sports History Network, because they are great, and some of the guests are just outstanding. As a matter of fact, most of the guests are outstanding, and you will just love the content of the Sports History Network. Peeking up at the clock, the time's running down. We're going to go into victory formation, take a knee, and let this baby run out. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you back tomorrow for the next podcast. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Have you ever noticed that the lower jaw is not protected in sports? Did you know that 10,800 concussions will happen today? This has been an upward trend for the past 50 years. I'm Dr. Michael Hutchison, a practicing neuromuscular dentist. When my son wanted to participate in football and rugby, I was afraid he was going to get a concussion. That fear led me to finding the missing link to reducing concussions. The fact is, the only part of the skull that is not protected in sports is the lower jaw. If you want to drastically reduce concussions, there are three basic jaw positions that affect concussions, and two of them are not good. The correct one is called physiologic jaw position. It will dissipate the force away from the brain. Knowing that, I designed an appliance that put my son's jaw in the right place, and as a result, he was concussion-free from fifth grade all the way to senior year. This jaw position takes those 10,800 concussions today down to 28. It's the key to concussion protection. As a parent, this is what you need to know. It's extremely important that the device you are using is on the lower jaw. Thickness of the device is important. Most importantly, it must position and hold you in your own unique personal physiologic jaw position. So if your child goes out on the field with the correct jaw position, your son or daughter will not one of those 10,800 concussions today. Get yours today at powerplusmouthguard.com. Use the promo code POWERUP2023 for 10% off.